And now on Tucson Business Radio, let's find out how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise with your host, Karen Fisher.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's broadcast of Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. We are broadcasting live from the Business Radio X Tucson studio, which is located in the Stewart Title Building right off of Broadway. And I have two fabulous guests that I've had the honor of knowing for both of them for many, many years. And we are super excited to be able to share with you things that they see going on as far as with families, what's going on within Tucson, and just all the fun things and opportunities that we have. So first and foremost, I'd like to welcome Janelle Curry.
Thank you.
Janelle. So glad that you are here. And then also Cindy Scheller. So say hello. They've got to know that I'm not making you guys up, you know.
Hi, so, it's great to be here.
It is super fun. So I'm going to start with just a little bit of some really, really good news, and then I'm going to share a little bit about the bios with my amazing guests. But this is really interesting. Out of Kiplinger's letters, and oh, by the way, I am Karen Fisher, Senior Loan Officer with Summit Funding. But the really great news out of Kiplinger's letter that just came out, some information regarding Tucson, which we kind of already know because we know and love Tucson and have chosen to live here very intentionally. But some cool things about this. The state of Arizona, our population, this blows my mind. Our population is 7,172,000. I think most of them are up in Phoenix versus here. You know, they're about 3 million.
That's okay. They can stay up there.
Get this. The unemployment rate for our state, the whole state, is 5%. That's very low, very, very low. In 2019, the job growth prediction, we have had 2.5% job growth. So we created 72,300 jobs, which I
amazing.
Definitely am seeing. And the prediction for 2020 is actually going down. And this is a very interesting reason why. And we actually have... you know, at least within Pima County, we've got some resources to teach them. But the predicted job growth for 2020 is actually at 1.7%, which is just a little over 50,000 jobs. And the reason that they have said that is because we're missing candidates, job candidates. I mean, we are, I know, Cindy, you're
for sure.
looking at hiring right now.
Yes.
And
yes,
getting
definitely.
That right person with the right skills. So.
Yes.
I'm telling people, you know, as far as, especially in the trades right now, anything within the skilled trades or, you know, it really doesn't, if they've got just some basic work skills, like showing up on time, that might be a concept, you know, doing things. I mean, there's great job opportunity in Tucson. And then real quick, I'll just say some of the things that came out of Kiplinger. It says, Arizona is noted for its growing labor force as well as its relative affordability and business-friendly regulatory environment. Hiring will increase. This is for 2019. It increased just a tad below 2018's 2.7 rise. And this is the part that I think is healthy because we've lived through Arizona when we had some unhealthy growth. But what's interesting is that the growth is actually well distributed across the sectors from good paying blue collar work in construction, manufacturing, trucking business, which thank you, that's Port of Tucson. That was absolutely visionary what they did there. Hence, that's why one of the reasons why Amazon came here, because of the Port of Tucson. People are like, you don't have water. Yes, we don't have water, but we've got the port and the taxation. The strongest growth will be in the Phoenix area. That's just kind of natural. And then this is interesting that's happening both in Phoenix and in Tucson. The Mayo Clinic is investing $650 million for a major expansion of its operations in Phoenix, while Caterpillar's Surface Mining and Technology Division is building the new headquarters. It's almost 1,000 engineers, product developers, and support staff in Tucson. And then the Rosemont Mine, although that's been kind of put on hold by the federal judge. So it's really interesting. And then the service sector is expanding partly because of the growing number of retirees. So with
right.
that, as far as the retirees, I want to talk to both of you. So first of all, I'm going to just share a little bit, I mean, just a tad, you'll be able to find their complete bios on our website. Be sure to visit that as far as the information. But I want to give you just a little bit of a highlight, particularly, we'll start with Janelle right now. But background, I mean, she's, you know, you've, I mean, your background is very, very wide and full of variety, but you've got your background in design, mm-hmm. and then you actually went back to school and got your master's in, what's the exact degree?
Well, the degree is, it's in planning, but planning has many, many different aspects to it. So it can be urban planning, environmental planning, land use planning.
So all of the above.
We get a little bit of all of it in the master's degree, and I'm particularly interested in infill and redevelopment.
Which that, I mean, think about what that does for a community as far as community revitalization and keeping it healthy versus it just spreading out.
That's very important to me. So you could say it's right up against the importance of good environmental planning. So I'm particularly interested in the concepts of how we're going to deal with things going forward as right at those juncture points where development is meeting with urban development, because those are some key points.
Well, and as far as with the design, we've had many offline conversations about this. The difference with what will happen, let's take residential, for example, and I know you do commercial as well, but let's just even look at just residential. Well thought out, well-designed residential, as far as that flow and things like that, it's interesting, like a well-laid-out floor plan versus something that's just like you walk in there and you go, was it done by committee? You're not really sure.
Well, you know what I like to say about design is good design is simply unnoticeable, because what happens is when things are designed properly and good, it barely registers. It just works for you. And you wouldn't even really be able to say why, but just something feels right, or it just looks right, or it's not even on your radar at all because it's just flowing so perfectly. So I got a lot of good training from an industrial designer, and we always talked about less is more. And there's always a really critical point where we can over-design things, but it's that perfect point of just in between that really makes design work.
So what are some of those perfect things? Or well, I would love to see, just from what you see out there, what are some of the mistakes that you go, the cringeworthy mistakes?
Oh, my goodness, the list is so long. Oh, but I'll just say a really simple thing, because I talk about remodeling on my blog quite a bit. And one of the biggest mistakes people make thinking they're creating value in their home is let's enclose our garage and throw some carpet down and we'll make it a family room. And then we've created more space for our home. But in fact, it can ruin the flow of your floor plan. I've also seen people enclose the patio in the back, and then all of a sudden you have to walk through another room to get to it. And what people don't realize is that can actually ruin the value of your home, because now you have a dysfunctional floor plan. And that's actually way more important than the square footage you just created.
Well, and the interesting thing, I've walked into different houses and the square footage, so like, for example, in one home that I know of, the square footage was only about 2,200 square feet, but it felt much larger. It actually had more, I guess the best way of saying it is livable or usable space. Mm-hmm. And then I've been in homes that are like 3,600 or 4,000 square feet, and it's just like, my words are that it felt clunky. Is that, mm-hmm. you know, just like, mm-hmm. like, why is that there? It doesn't make any sense.
That's a perfect description for when design is not working, because you're absolutely right. You can be in a smaller space and it can feel really spacious. And one of the things I talk about in my blog is that if you're in a smaller space, it's really important to use the same materials and same colors, same flooring, same wall color, because that actually creates continuity. Only in big spaces can we use a disruption of color and floor change and other things like this, because the space can handle the change. But when it's a small space, it's really critical to maintain everything being the same, because it makes it feel bigger. Just like lighter colors make a room feel better, white ceilings make it feel taller.
Right. And do you see people moving towards designing for the future? more and more people want to age at home in place, but their homes are not designed for that in many, many cases. So are people even thinking about that?
They are, but unfortunately, like, we're in this love affair with the color gray right now, and I feel like saying, okay, stop already, because it's, if you do that now, you're already becoming out of fashion. So that's an example of where it's gone beyond the point of it being the right thing to do for the future, because we are moving on to the next thing. And there are many, many things like that. And but, you know, there are some really simple things you can do to your home, even though it might be out of date. I live in an early 60s home, and there's only a few things I did to open up the space to make it feel more modern. So
what were the things that you did?
Like, I just removed, it's funny, I don't know what the thing was in the 60s, but I had a beautiful beam that was completely enclosed with drywall, and they dropped the roof line, the ceiling height down. So I just opened up that one small space, and it completely transformed the volume of the room. And another thing I did was in the kitchen, I just took out one wall that divided the dining room from the kitchen space, and that created space. I put recessed lighting in the ceiling. That makes it feel, the ceilings feel taller. So just little tiny things, and they're not necessarily a lot of money. There's nothing that makes me sad is when I go and I look at hundreds of homes every year, is to see someone spend a lot of their hard-earned money on bad ideas and or bad or outdated colors, because that actually doesn't help them. If homes are still one of the biggest assets we have, we need to be kind of mindful about the things that we're choosing to do to it.
How did you know about the beam if it was covered in drywall?
It was just a wild guess.
See, she knows this.
I've done.
Well, and then with Cindy, as far as some of the, so behind the scenes, Cindy Scheller, and what, and again, we're healthy, wealthy, and wise. One of the key things with Cindy as far as the health piece of it is that behind the scenes, you've been an absolute godsend to me as we've been dealing with some of my in-laws and the issues as far as the elderly and the health issues and things like that. And the non-medical home health care, which it's funny to me what they consider to be non-medical, because I think to myself, oh my gosh, it seems kind of medical to me. But
there are many shades of gray.
Many shades of gray. We'll have to take that. But I know that there are many people I talk to, and they're like, they are taking me out of this house feet first. I am not moving. But what do you see as far as, like, we didn't realize it in our own personal home. My husband and I, we didn't buy this house that we're in with this in mind. But because I have a relative who's in a wheelchair, and then three other relatives that are with walkers, we didn't realize it, but our home is actually barrier-free. Our hallways are over 3 feet wide, and it's a direct shot to the bathroom. It's like Scott and I figured out, you know what? We can stay here forever, because there's no and yet my sister-in-law and her husband, they had to move from their very, very long-term home because they had a split-level home, but no bathroom on the main floor.
What's really important when you're thinking about, more and more people want to stay at home. That's the bottom line. And in terms of non-medical in-home care, I say many shades of gray, but the reality is, as long as they want to stay at home and you can keep them safe and healthy at home by coordinating with other service providers like skilled home health care that provides physical therapy, occupational therapy, nursing visits, or even hospice at the end of the life. It's all possible. But in terms of housing structures, even with my husband just had a total hip replacement, and we have a very small step into the living room. And outside, when you drive in the, what do you call that, when it goes into a U, a pass-through, there's a red brick, like French porch step up. So I never really thought about it, but he was in a walker, so we had to be really careful, right? So when people are buying homes, if you know it's going to be your forever home, then those are some of the things that you look for. So the bathrooms, typically they don't have those huge entryways. And I think, as you were saying, Janelle, you know, some of these fixes are super easy to do. But one of the things that we do an in-home safety check, and we look for rugs that aren't kind of, you know, non-slip rugs, and we look for extension cords and things that are unsafe. And part of that could be something that flows very nicely to what you do. You could come in and say, look, all we have to do is XYZ to make your home compliant. Mm-hmm. Maybe take out the bathtub and put in a walk-through shower is one of the things that's a big issue.
One of the things that I've seen recently as far as some of the showers and things like that, they really have, just as far as some nice design, it seems that there's some really beautiful things that you can do. And some of the showers, a lot of them don't have the... One of the things that was super popular in the 70s was the bathtub with the doors on it and then the showers there. So you're having to step the bathtub to get into the shower.
Yeah.
And that's in our old bathroom, and I just think, that was really stupid who came up with that plan.
But it's great that Janelle said that, because our house was built in 1958. And the master bathroom shower is really tiny. You can only stand one way. And I cannot wait to remodel my bathrooms, because they're built for very small individuals. You might fit in it, Karen, but Lee and I have a hard time. And when you think about remodeling, all you're thinking is, oh my gosh, this is going to cost me $100,000 to remodel my house.
Well, it's interesting you brought that up, because I had the same problem. And it was especially true in the 50s and 60s. The master bathrooms are only one person can stand in there at a time.
Half a person, really.
Yeah, they're really teeny. So I had the same problem in my house. And I happened to realize that in the hall there was a closet. And I actually gave up the hall closet and acquired that and expanded the shower. And we did the same thing. We created so there's no step up. And actually, I was thinking about being older, and I'm getting this more and more, and about any kind of steps in homes. And mm-hmm. I have people tell me, look, don't show me anything that's got steps in it. And so it is something we need to think about, and not having movable doors and not stepping over things and having – it's just, I really hate those hospital grab bars. Can't we come up with something prettier than that? But
well, they actually do have some things that are out there. They're not as inexpensive as grab bars, but there are some other things out there. My mother lives with us as well, and we have a bathtub that you step over with glass doors that needs to come out as well. But she's a very young 78, and so she deals with it. But that's, you know, something we all have to deal with. So I think it's awesome that there are people out there like you that can help navigate some of those remodeling questions.
Yeah. Well, and even with the grabs, so what are some of the things that you're seeing that are maybe the alternatives, because they've got to be anchored in and things like that? The one thing that my brother and my sister-in-law and brother-in-law did, when they put in their tile and they put in the grab bars, they used the grab bars at least in the same color, because he's a quadriplegic, so there's a lot that they needed. And at least it kind of just faded away, that maybe about that color, instead of that, you know, oh, you've got white tile, and now you've got this silver thing sticking out.
Well, I think some alternatives, you can just simply go to a yard sale and find some interesting grab bars, you know, handles of some kind. There's all kinds of fun ways to do it. You don't have mm-hmm. to do the really big round wide ones. There's many different options.
Some ways to make it aesthetically pleasing.
I mean, just having a bath bench in the shower would be
for a
an
lot of
advantage.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, until you need it, you can use it to shave your legs. Let's be honest.
Well, yeah. So no, that it's huge. Well, Cindy, let's talk a little bit about so your background. You have been in home healthcare now. It's been.
I'm not telling.
You have to.
A long time. I've been in the healthcare industry for 25 years.
25 years.
And I've owned my own business for started in 2015. So background.
Well, you had worked for so many other companies. You were in charge of all of them.
I did. I've worked in assisted living. I've worked with hospice. I've worked in home infusion therapy. Worked and ran large home health care agencies. My company, Caring Senior Service, we specialize in non-medical in-home care and case management. And the majority of our clients are pretty high acuity and not by choice. It's just the referrals we get, which is a testament to our staff and our home health aides and our caregivers.
But one of the things that's happening right now, because as we've got, because the population, certainly as from Kiplinger's letter, the number of retirees and things that are here, one of the things that I see happening, and I would love for you to talk about the options where I've often seen where people have come and they've got their winter home and their children may be back east or in Chicago or whatever the step case may be, and uh-oh, mom or dad gets sick.
It's actually a pretty timely topic because the holidays are coming up and there are a lot of family events. And truly, for some of our parents and grandparents, those big raucous holiday get-togethers are a bit much for them. So rather than excluding them, you can have a caregiver come in and assist your family member so that they can be a part of the group, but yet you're not the one that has to take them to the bathroom and help them clean their tush or whatever care that they need. And what that does is it allows you to be the family member and not the caregiver. So you can enjoy the event, whether it's a religious event or whether it's just a family get together. And the snowbirds or our winter visitors, if they don't like that label, they do come in, and a lot of them need a little extra help. Like, God forbid they fall, and they need a hip replacement, or they're just simply not feeling well, or they get the flu. You know, you can have a caregiver come in for a week or two. It's just whatever they need.
Well, and I know that that's been a big godsend. One of the things that that we have witnessed with, you know, with what's happening, and I see a lot of clients that are doing this needing, you know, oftentimes that's the reason why they're coming to me to refinance or to do something. A lot of times, I mean, I've got several clients this year that they're moving mom or dad into their home. And yet I worry about them, and I've seen them afterwards. So some of the statistics that are here, and this one is particularly alarming, is that the caregivers themselves, so they're not even the one that's sick or injured, but they have a 63% higher mortality rate.
The family caregivers.
The family caregivers.
Because they're taking care of their loved one. And oftentimes with caregivers is family caregivers, all caregivers really, there's a few things that happen. So the caregiver stress that happens is huge. They are at greater risk for health issues. They're at greater risk for depression. They simply get tired and oftentimes don't know they're tired. I have a client right now, and she's been a longtime business colleague of mine, and her mother-in-law lives with them, and she has been her primary caregiver, and she has her own business. And we talked a couple years ago, and she finally came to me and said, I need a break. I want to be the daughter. I want to be the daughter-in-law. I don't want to be the caregiver full-time. And they finally made the choice to bring in staff. We only go 2 or 3 days a week when she has a meeting or whatever. And it's brought her a huge sense of relief. And the great part for her mother-in-law is that our caregiver takes her to the mall. They go to the movies. They go shopping. They do all the things that her mother-in-law loves to do. And then my client can go out and run her business and have some me time. So as a family caregiver, that's part of what you're losing. You're losing your freedom and your me time, and you don't even realize it. So once your family member starts really aging in place and they really start declining, you kind of do this slow slide into it, and you really don't know how overwhelmed you're getting. But more and more families are combined. I mentioned that my mom has lived with us, and my dad passed away last year. My mother-in-law lived with us for a while. So resources like our agency are out there to help.
Well, and even in your own family, you used your own care. She's like, I own a home healthcare agency, and I need help. I know that I can't do this, because at some point, even though you're the expert.
And, you know, my husband was a rock star. He didn't really need personal care per se.
Yeah.
After the first week, I needed help Even picking up my, I have a little one, picking him up from school and schlepping Lee to the physical therapist. So I did have a caregiver with them. And it relieves a lot of stress, because what it means is when you're a family caregiver, it takes a physical toll, it takes an emotional toll, and it takes a financial toll. And I told this story last year, I think, when my dad got really sick and he ended up on hospice. I did exactly what I tell people not to do. And I stayed home with my mom for a couple of weeks and cared for my dad. So I wasn't in the business. I was taking care of a family member. And here I have this fleet of perfectly qualified caregivers that could have come in. And I just wasn't thinking. And that's the point. You're not thinking straight when you're under that kind of pressure. And you do it out of love, but it's still pressure that a lot of people don't recognize.
Well, and so with that, as we're moving into some of the urban planning and things like that, so we've had to move my mother-in-law into a memory care facility. And one of the things that I've noticed is that when we were looking for the different assisted living and specifically memory care, first of all, there's 86 million of them. Secondly, many of them are institutionally owned, mm-hmm. like big corporations. Like, I mean, there's kind of follow the money trail. There's a lot of money in this. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, because of the way that it is, from the zoning for within Pima County, those care homes can be anywhere. There's not a specific... they can't be denied the zoning. So they're tucked away in some neighborhoods. Some of them are fantastic. Some of them are downright scary. And listeners, I'm going to tell you right now, one of the main things to do, if you do have to put your loved one into any type of assisted living or memory care, the biggest tip that I received is do not set appointments. You just pop in. You pop in and you pop in at different times so that you can see what's happening. And start asking the questions of, you know, how much turnover is there in the staff? What is really happening?
And I will tell you, let me interject, because there are professionals out there and they're called placement agents that can help families sort through all of the assisted livings. And what they do is they sit down with the family and potentially the client, and they talk about budget, and they will help you narrow down that field.
You were my helper on that, because I had you on speed dial. That's
it's true, but you know, and I can give advice, but the thing about the professional placement agents, and there are only a handful that we work with at my agency, but they know the demographics, they know if they've had any deficiencies, they know if there's been management changeovers. And the big facilities are great for some people, and the small assisted livings are great for others. One of the groups I'm involved with is called Insights on Aging, and we're a panel of healthcare really educators, and we talk about the continuum of care. But Anthony Von Diaz owns Shante Rosa's Assisted Living. Rosa Shante's, don't kill me, Anthony. Rosa Shante's Assisted Living, and he really specializes in behavioral health. And he's had this care home for many, many years, and he's been a mentor to a lot of new owners. But the point is there are a lot of people that can help you through that. So if anybody out there is facing what Karen's talking about, feel free to call me. My information will be up on the site, but I can give you referrals to people that can help you through that.
It's huge. I mean, it's just really, really true. So, Janelle, with what you're saying, talk to me about what you've got a lot of clients. You work with clients in all spectrums, but you also have a very specific expertise in helping retiring people. Tell me a little bit more about, like, what is it that you're finding when they're saying, I want to retire in Arizona? What are they sharing with you?
Well, it's really interesting because Arizona is one of the top four target states, and we are seeing, I think they expect it to increase by at least 10% over the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So we are a target partly because of the number one thing I think people might say is the weather, but the second thing right behind that is the cost of living is much less here. And there are a lot of states that are starting to move toward, they're doing higher density infill by making special zoning changes for allowing people to have guest houses if they stay under a certain size. And that, I think Tucson needs to catch up to that, because I think that's where we're headed. Because while there are a lot of people that are looking for more independent, the people that are looking for independent living, I think having the availability of making a higher density in smaller spaces and that are close to amenities. I mean, that's the big movement in planning, is starting to create less car-centric development, because we're starting to go, wait a minute, we're starting to get a lot of sprawl, and it's making people feel more disconnected. So there's actually a big movement toward condensing and bringing people closer to amenities. So that'll get people out walking and using public transportation. And beyond that, it's just happens to be that I listened in on a very big movement for seniors, is they're doing these huge developments that are almost resort-like, and that's kind of the opposite end of just having a guest house that you'll build mm-hmm. for mom and dad. But they have independent living, assisted care, memory care, medical facilities in these enormous resort kind of. But, you know, not all of us. As a matter of fact, I was just talking with another developer this morning, and she's like, but that's for not our generation. We don't want that. But there is a large number of people, especially people that come from bigger cities, they're kind of looking for that idea. So there's a wide range of things we need to think about, but I do think we have to address it, because we are one of the top four states that are going to be seeing a much higher increase of retirees.
And part of the reason why you're seeing these huge communities is because the senior population is going to be massive very soon. Part of the challenges with that as well is, although we have great rise in unemployment rates, or lowering, and how do you say that?
We have very low unemployment.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, there you go. You got it.
But the need for technical trained people is really great in Tucson. So I'm always chasing those qualified, compassionate caregivers that can work. And not only am I looking for those people, but all of those large assisted livings are looking for them. The hospice companies are looking. All the healthcare providers need these caregivers, and it's you're constantly recruiting for them. And there's going to be, you know, when you were talking about the growth with Caterpillar, Oral Valley is becoming a very large matrix for biomedical engineering firms and biomedical technology firms.
Yeah, one of the top areas as far as technology. And listeners on the show, I always like to brag on our daughter and her fiance, but Allison's getting her doctorate in applied mathematics with an emphasis in computational neuroscience. And it's interesting hearing the information, because she is the people and the places, just like Ventana Medical, but many, many others, as far as in U of A's Tech Park, et cetera, there's a big movement. People do not want to, they keep saying, oh, 70's the new 40 or 70's the new, you know, they keep making up the numbers, whatever it is. But bottom line is, they're not sitting there in a rocking chair and going off into the sunset. They're that idea of how do they age in place, but to do things, and I see people doing, continuing to do art and continuing to do, you know, mentoring and business and entrepreneurial things. The largest growing technical population is in the population that is actually over 80 years old. Isn't that interesting? You know, you think, oh, they don't know how to use the computer. That is their, that's the fastest growing segment of those technology. And they'll say they want to be able to see their grandkids, and they want to be able to connect with the rest of the world. Their legs might not work, but by gosh and by golly, their minds do.
But at the other end of that spectrum, we have the people that are suffering from Alzheimer's.
Yes.
There's a big push right now for Alzheimer's awareness. Everybody's raising money for research, and We're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of diseases that are impacting the brain. ALS clients, we have ALS clients, we have Parkinson's clients. And so all of these seniors that are aging, some of them are very active, and then some of them have some very real specific problems.
Yeah, huge medical things on top of it.
And I think, like you were saying before, you know, when you're researching a designer or a home builder or a remodeler or a hospice company or a home care company, it's really about dealing with people who you know, like, and trust. And if you don't, you know, Karen is an incredible resource for these listeners out here because she knows so many people, and she can point everybody in the right direction because she really works with people that she respects and trusts.
Well, and you know, the reality is, and I just want to remind listeners, this is the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise radio show. Very eclectic. We bring people from all areas of life, but my whole passion, I've done radio for better than 20 years, and my passion is to connect people with the resources and the information, because within Tucson, I mean, it's amazing. And again, this is Business Radio X Tucson. We're broadcasting live from the Stewart Title. It's actually the Business Radio X Tucson studio, but it's located within the Stewart Title corporate businesses right there off of Broadway, and we've got the most beautiful place. It's mm-hmm. just fantastic. But one of the things that I see, you know, if you think about my business, it's such a bizarre business of my own that first and foremost, I ask all the questions that your mother told you weren't allowed to ask. You know, how much do you make? What's in the bank? And oh, by the way, what's your age? And you can't fake it. You have to prove it to me. And oh, by the way, you got to prove it to me not once, not twice, but three times according to the new federal regulations. So with that, I see people as far as these resources and the things that they need. And that's why I wanted to have both of you here as far as the show and to talk about what are the things and the possibilities. So one of the other things that I'm seeing some of my retirees doing is they want to invest in real estate. Like they're done with their corporate thing and they're now wanting to maybe buy a home, fix it, maybe hold it, maybe flip it. Talk to us about those clients that you're seeing doing that.
Well, it's interesting because that's actually the model that my financial planner told me to do, is to include real estate in part of my retirement plan. And the reason for that is because the income from investment real estate is actually taxed differently. So that's really important to retirees if they don't have a lot of deductions, which when we're thinking about getting to a retirement age, maybe we don't want to have a mortgage, but we should really think about that because sometimes we might need some deductions. And one of the avenues is investments can give us is, one, it gives us interest deduction on mortgages, but also with it being taxed differently, the income is taxed differently, that can be making a fairly substantial difference. The only thing is, I think it's tricky to remember that you may not want to take care of and manage your own real estate. You may want to have a manager. You need to be really careful about who you pick. I'd interview a lot of different people because some people have reported to me they feel like they get nickeled and dimed by the property management firms. So I think really understanding how they work is really important. So you need to know enough about getting involved in that so that you're on top of what's happening with your project. I tend to do everything myself because I prefer to know what's going on. And I'm one of those kind of people in my own investment properties is I take super good care of them. One, because I want to make sure my asset is in always good condition in case I need to sell it soon. And two, deferred maintenance always becomes a bigger headache than we'd like for it to be. So one of the things I always tell people is don't let the maintenance on your home or an investment property get to be a bigger problem.
So what do you see people letting slide? I think that they move in. That's a load of
everything.
What's
the number one thing is roof maintenance.
I was going to say the roof.
I think the reason why is because you and I are not climbing up there to look at it, number one. So unless a leak is happening in the ceiling, we're not paying attention. But I would say, especially because we have such extreme temperatures, our roofs take a beating. And so without fail, there's always roofing problems. Mm-hmm. So the next thing is taking care of the exterior, and then probably two of the other really top important things to pay attention to is plumbing and your sewer systems, which we often don't. My neighbor once said to me, he said, plumbing just happens to you. Well, and that's true. We're not plumbing, thinking about it until we have a problem. And then it could be a very expensive problem.
Sounds like home care.
One of the things that it seems... I always think that it's interesting that with our automobiles, we'll take them in and get them serviced, whatever the manufacturer recommends that we do. But with our roofs or just the basic, like sometimes people only think of home inspectors for just when they're buying a property. But wouldn't it be a wise, I know a couple of inspectors that do this, that they will actually do basically a house checkup to, you know, what's going on with your house.
It's really important because especially if you're not into that kind of stuff, to have somebody keeping an eye on things. One of the other things is I always have all the major systems checked every year for my properties, because the other thing is I don't want them calling me. I don't want tenants calling me. You know, we want happy tenants that are just living their lives and giving the rent check to us, and we're keeping things in good condition, then we don't have any of those emergency calls. And also, you just have a happier, healthier relationship. So if you're going to get involved in that kind of thing, especially if you want to keep it as painless as possible, it's really important to make sure your property's maintained.
Well, and then from a tax standpoint, as far as the property management, you can still hire a property manager. You do need to check with your CPA on this. But hire a property manager does not mean that it's passive income. You can still be involved. You just don't necessarily need to be the person that is letting them know that your rent check bounced or anything exciting like that.
Well, I think one of the important things about having a management company is they have usually a legal system behind them, and that's important. I mean, hopefully you never need it, but if you do, that's a world that a lot of us don't know much about. So I think a good management company that has a good legal team behind them and they have a good system in place, they have good leases that keep everybody safe, those are really important things, and those are definitely valuable.
Well, and the property management versus the sale or purchasing of real estate, they're like two totally different. Like you've got a totally different, like you're managing it for your own properties, but you're not really doing a bunch of management for other people.
I get asked that question all the time. People would love it if I would. I happen to work for a brokerage that doesn't allow it. And I've often...
Good plan, actually.
Yeah. My broker says it's a thankless job. So that's one thing they knew they didn't want to get involved in.
I think it's interesting that seniors are buying up investment properties, and they should, because healthcare is getting more and more expensive every day, and we have a huge population of people that simply cannot afford it. So if you're able to make those right investments now, they will pay off when you get older and you do want to stay at
home.
Well,
and as far as with the cash flow is just, it's huge. It's super important. And what's interesting to me, I think about it, and I never share my individual clients' names or anything like that, but I have clients that come from all over the world. Right now, we're getting a huge influx of clients from it's already snowing in Denver today. That people have, I already got two calls this week. They're like, that's it, we're out of here. But a lot of people coming from California right now, because they're able to parlay the sale of their home in California. One of my clients has had property in Northern California for 30 plus years. They're selling literally everything they've bought in Florida, they've bought in Arizona, and they are parlaying their three properties out of California, and we're up to 10 properties between the two states. And the cash flow, the numbers, and then our taxes here are considerably less than in Florida, which is, I didn't realize that, you know, because we're licensed as a company in Florida, but I don't do business in Florida.
Well, it's interesting, in the downturn that happened almost 10 years ago, Arizona was one of the most hardest hit, and Florida. So our depreciation of value was shocking. I was doing broker price opinions right after the downturn happened. So I was going into the properties that were getting foreclosed on, and I was seeing values drop in toward the main part of the city. I always call the main central part of the city in Tucson the U of A. But if that's the nucleus, the further we go out, the values drops were much heavier as we moved out of town. I saw upwards of 80%.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, but closer into town, our values were a little more protected, and I only saw drops between 25 and 35%. So we had a long way. The point of that is that we had a long path to get to where we are. So we're still a good value, but our market is definitely becoming more and more robust. So we are a good value, but it's changing. We're definitely mm-hmm. seeing, and we are not in competition with any of the West Coast pricing at all, but it is definitely becoming more brisk, I would say.
Yeah, and one of the things that's interesting is within Pima County, we don't have as big of a swing up or as big of a crash mm-hmm. down as Maricopa County had.
That's right.
Like, it's very interesting. But one of the parts that has been really positive within Tucson is at the time of the downturn in the economy, we had just a huge overabundance, if mm-hmm. you will, of call centers. Mm-hmm. And the call center jobs, while that is an important business, it's absolutely an important business. The call center jobs, the typical employee for that call center, that is not, the income level is just not the same. And so there's been a very intense focus as far as the Tucson regional economic opportunities. Like, okay, what is it? You know, where are those jobs coming from? We've got this top-notch research university. I am over the moon excited that now Oro Valley is going to have a veterinarian school. I mean, that is just huge. And then the brainstorm or the brainchild of that Port of Tucson, like that, people were laughing at the developer for the Port of Tucson. They're like, yeah, right. And now they're like, oh, well, they're kind of brilliant. And so tell me, you've been in Arizona now for how long?
Well, I was born and raised here. Jumped in and out.
Yeah.
Well, I was born in Mesa. And we moved here when I was in junior high. And then I've bounced, you know, I lived in Europe. I've lived in LA a couple times, but I've landed at home again. Probably
came back.
Came back like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, what hits home for me is just that, you know, the minimum wage keeps on going higher, which makes the cost of our services go higher. And truly trying to recruit the staff that we need to take care of our community is huge for us. And I'm hopeful every day. You know, I feel like I've read a lot of articles about how kids are kind of moving away from degrees and going towards trade schools. And I don't know if that's a reality or just a wish of people that use tradesmen. But I know that there is a nationwide shortage of caregivers. And we knew this was coming a long time ago, but nobody's got the magic bullet to solve it.
So if somebody said, you know what, I think I'd make a great caregiver, where would you have them? What would they do as far as that saying, I'm really interested in it? Is that through the colleges, through Pima College?
There's several schools in town. There's a handful of schools in town that provide certified nursing and training and certified caregiver training. Pima College is one. Caregiver Training Institute is another one. Excellence, she's going to kill me. Caregivers Excellence is another school. But
they can reach out to you and they're saying, you know what, I'm really interested. This might be something I'm great at. And there's some flexibility, too. I know that many of your employees have been with you for years. They follow you everywhere. Mm-hmm. But
They do. And we're also reaching out to people that want second and third careers because people over, you know, kind of that sweet spot is 30 and 50 even. You know, a lot of clients, especially the older clients, the much older clients, they don't want really young caregivers. They want somebody that they can relate to and have conversations mm-hmm. with. And so we've reached out to the AARP, so we're working with them as well. And so what I've always said in my business is that if you have the compassion and passion to work with people, we can teach you anything. We can find resources. It takes a very special person to provide care to people that are in need. So,
but it's such a gift, and some of the caregivers, some of the most gratifying jobs that they're possible.
And it's also a very difficult job.
It's difficult, but
it's challenging, right?
They're all difficult.
It's challenging, but you know, we've been very, very blessed this year. There's a lot of agencies in town. We're all kind of vying for the same caregivers, so. You know, if you live anywhere else in the country, feel free to move to Tucson. Call me up. Yeah. I'll get you work all day long, every day. So we just have a great community. Love Tucson. Love what you're doing, Janelle. Always love what you're doing, Karen.
I have the best job in the world. I'm giving other people's money away. Right. So Janelle, your background is Tucson, and then you've come back. Tell me a little bit about, you know, where you've grown up and why Tucson? When all of us could live anywhere, I always like to ask, why Tucson?
Well, I actually moved here in 1985, and I'm from Southern California, and we were working a particular type of business, and the partner I had at the time, we started saying, it's just too hard here. It's not that you can't make a good living. It's just hard making a living.
Where? In Southern California?
Southern California. Yeah. Just the traffic, number one.
Go from there.
We were just tired and started looking around and found a company in Phoenix that wanted to open a division in Tucson. So came to Tucson to do a startup. And it was, and I found it to be a marvelous place to be. The quality of life here is fantastic. And so I worked in, it was a graphic design, marketing, technical illustration, color lab. And then we got into exhibitry, and that's where I got my start doing exhibit design. And so the owner of the company, I think he was ready to scale down and retire out. And so I basically bought the business from him, and then I carried it on for another 10 years. And that's when I decided I wanted to get into development. As I got into these bigger projects, I realized it was just never quite going as deep as I wanted to go. And development is not easy. Anybody who's doing it will tell you it's a very, very difficult thing to do, very high risk. But I wanted to do it myself because I wanted the creative aspects of it. So that's why I tried to do it on my own. Because as soon as you work for another developer, you're giving up creative control. And that, to me,
that's an interesting thing.
That's the most important part.
Well, talk to us about this one project. I know about it, but talk to us about the project that you had that helped artists.
Oh, well, that was probably the biggest project that I tried to tackle. And somebody, one of the architects I was working with, said, if you knew what you were getting into, would you have done it? And I said, probably not. But I found an old Adobe warehouse, and I was able to make some creative financial arrangements. And it was actually owned by the Sisters of St. Joseph. And they gave me a carryback loan, which meant that they held, I was able to use them as the bank. And we worked together for 10 years while I developed the inside of this warehouse. It's the biggest Adobe warehouse, at least at the time, that had been developed for something like this. And so we were actually the largest privately held art studio complex in Tucson. And it was kind of ahead of its time. So we were flying under the radar in a lot of ways. And a lot of the challenges I had in development services were they just didn't know how we had to figure out how to navigate trying to create a project like this. So we ended up having 16 art studios. And
isn't that fabulous?
The thing that was most satisfying for me is when artists came, it's a very particular type of person. And when people would say, I really like how it feels here, that to me told me I succeeded. And so we did that project for quite a long time. And then I was completely, you know, overtaken by doing development after that, because it was such a satisfying thing to do. And it felt like it was a needed thing. And to be able to provide affordable art studios to people, because a lot of people, you know, they need their rents to be reasonable to do their craft. And so we gave people, and I, when I left, as a matter of fact, I believe two of the people are still, even the woman that carried on my project, she was a photographer and she still owns it actually. And I was just talking to her today. She's from the San Diego area, and there are still the same people there. So that is really, to me, very satisfying.
When you, and I just think as far as some of the things that you've got within Tucson, it's so interesting to me when you talk about the quality of the life. So I came to school, to go to school at the U of A, and we were here. That's where I met my husband. And then we moved back to Phoenix, which I'm a Phoenix native, and moved back to Phoenix. We were there for 14 years. And then he was given an opportunity with his jobs. At the time, he had four job offers on the table at the same time. One of them was in San Francisco area, and I'm like, I'm not moving where there's earthquakes. It's just not happening. Mm-hmm. Another was New Jersey, and honestly, I'm not dealing with the weather in New Jersey. That's not happening. A third was in Dallas, and we actually did a house hunting trip in Dallas, which was interesting. Dallas was actually a big contender. It was kind of interesting, though, because the way Dallas is, having grown up in Arizona, I'm really used to the mountains, kind of like a security blanket, mm-hmm. and it just goes on forever. And I felt like I was going to fall off the end of the earth. It's a really weird feeling when you're used to the mountains. And then the job for Tucson came up, and it's like, well, this is a no-brainer. So I just, in terms of what we're doing. So one of the things that I always love to do at the end of our show, and we're almost an hour, if you can believe this, an hour. So I love to ask, what is your favorite color? And
oh my gosh.
Favorite color and favorite fall activity to do. We'll do those two.
So I have to say, as I have two children, they're 21 years apart, and my oldest son gave me a grandbaby this year.
Yes, she's so...
Audrey Adair, and she is beautiful, and I was able to be in Texas. So we took the baby, 2 weeks old, to her first pumpkin patch, and that was just way too much fun. And then my 11-year-old, I'm excited about what Halloween costume he's going to pick this year so I can take him trick-or-treating. And that is always really fun for me. And I'm an artist when I have time. I haven't painted in several years. So it would, you know, I don't know that I have a favorite color.
You don't have a favorite color. Well, you don't have to pick. You could be,
I love the colors of the master painters. You know, the real deep, rich golds and emerald greens and royal purple. And I like just really rich and kind of that delicious deep colors. Mm. Not a big fan of pastels.
Very good. And how about you, Janelle? Favorite activities and favorite color?
Well, I think you know what my favorite activity is. Cycling, and cycling.
Yes. She
now
actually
the weather
teaches.
Is amazing. Oh yeah, and I teach spin. But during the summer, we can't cycle as much because it's too hot.
Yeah. Are you going to be riding in the tour?
I don't do the tour because that's big crowds are not my cup of tea.
Got it. But you love to cycle. I love being out there.
At least three or four times a week. I'm out there.
So the type of cycling, we've had these conversations offline. And I like to ride. I don't cycle like she does. I like to ride bikes, but my bike is like with the basket and the bottle of the wine and the cheese and the bread. And
she's just riding the
bike. Just like,
do you do the spin, Janelle?
Yes, she teaches spin.
Oh, I would love to try that. I would probably die in the first 2 minutes, but I would like to try it.
So, well, for me, as far as the fall activities, first of all, we already celebrated Oktoberfest up on Mount Lemmon. It is a tradition for us and for friends. I don't think we've missed a year since we moved back to Tucson, and it's been 20 years. But they have the Oompah, although the Oompah band's getting a little smaller and smaller because they're all getting older. Not so many Oompahs right now.
Just tell them to call me.
Yes, exactly. but also just being out, I love the Tucson mornings. I love just sitting out on our patio, watching that sunrise, and we've got the hummingbirds having their fights that they do. They're so funny. And for me personally, my very favorite color is blue, but all shades of blue, but blue. At one point in time, I looked in my closet. I'm like, oh, you really need to get another color in your closet because everything you have is blue. So one last thing, just parting thoughts. Tell us how they can reach you. I'd love your phone number. We've got the other details on there, but just your phone number. So
again, I'm Cindy Scheller, the owner of Caring Senior Service in Southern Arizona. And our phone number is 520-428-0143. Or if it's easier, you can call me at 1-800-SENIOR-CARE.
Oh, super great 800 number. That's cool. And Janelle?
So I'm a real estate agent with Tierra Antigua Realty, and I also have a blog, livewellintucson.com. And right now I have been blogging about remodeling, and I'm going to be talking about location, which is another really important aspect about preserving your real estate. But my phone number is 520-248-0599. I do interior design and remodeling, and please let me consult with you before you start a remodeling project.
She just wants to make sure your money's protected. And I am Karen Fisher with Summit Funding, and the easiest way to reach me is my direct line, which is 520-447-2279. That's 520-447-2279. And what I would encourage people to do is to let's take a look at the financial options. Don't make a decision. There's over 3,000 different types of loan products there. So don't decide that you can't qualify just because you decided. So without any further ado, thank you for listening. We are honored to be of service.